IVM. Welcome to States of Anarchy, a podcast on global affairs and foreign policy. I'm your host, Hamsini Hariharan. Now, every fortnight on the show, I talk to a guest about something related to international relations, all in the hope of making a little more sense of the world. But today's episode is special. It's the first Q&A segment where I answer questions and doubts from you. We have three questions today from Deep Menon. So Deep says, Taiwan, Taiwan, Taiwan. I mean, we should face it, that one of the former Asian tigers, maybe currently, it's quite the success story they have had after the 1980s, growing from colonial rule of the Japanese to China's wars to dictatorship, and now a technocratic democracy is some journey these folks have been through. But with an ever-growing Chinese influence and Taiwan being their sovereignty issue, I think it's important that viewers know of what's happening there now. Thus, I would like to know how they are managing to hold their country against the CCP realm, what was and is their success story for extensive economic growth, and how do they plan to hold, what is Tsai Ing-wen's policies? Thanks so much, Deep, for sending these in. I agree with you. It's really important for us to know what's happening with Taiwan. So for those of you who are not familiar with relations between Taiwan and China, here's a quick backstory that I'm going to start at the end of World War II. So there was the civil war in China, and Mao Zedong and the communists defeated Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang government. So Chiang Kai-shek and the rest of his government fled to Taiwan in 1949. The Kuomintang used martial law to stay in power for a couple of decades. And then by the 1980s, they slowly started democratizing more and more. Now they're a really vibrant democracy under President Tsai Ing-wen of the Democratic People's Party. So getting to Deep's questions, the first question that Deep asked was, how do the Taiwanese hold their country against the CCP or the Chinese Communist Party? To answer this question, we also need to go back in history again for a bit. Taiwan got military and economic support from the US since the 1950s. So what happened is that Taiwan became an essential part of the West's containment policy against international communism. Honestly, if it hadn't been for American security protection, Taiwan would have long ago come under Beijing's rule. In 1979, the U.S. switched diplomatic recognition from Taipei to Beijing. So what this meant was the end of U.S. military presence in Taiwan, but they still give Taiwan defensive support, like arms sales, they keep talking about a peaceful resolution to the issue, and so on. That's about how the U.S. helps. On the other side, we have relations between China and Taiwan. So after decades of, you know, hostile intentions and angry rhetoric, relations between China and Taiwan started improving in the 1980s. China put forward a formula known as one country, two systems. This is the same principle that it applies to Hong Kong. And what it says is that Taiwan would be given significant autonomy if it accepted Chinese reunification. Now, in Taiwan, the offer was rejected, but the government in Taipei did relax rules on visits and investments to China. So going back to the question, how does Taiwan hold its own? Taiwan pushes itself as a reasonable alternative to China, not only for the United States, but for any country that wants a partner in Asia. Taiwan earlier used to use international sovereignty. What I mean is that many countries in the African continent or in the Pacific Islands used to recognize Taiwan on international forums. But because of the PRC or the People's Republic of China's rise, many of these countries have switched over and they officially recognize the PRC instead. There are still a couple of countries that subscribe to recognizing only Taiwan, but that number is going down. I think the main point is Taiwan's soft power. The Taiwanese system boasts of being fair and open and a stable democracy with a huge emphasis on law. In fact, 2020 elections in Taiwan were really cool to observe, because all the votes were counted publicly and anyone, including you and me, could observe this process. Taiwan's policies are also very progressive. In 2019, Taiwan became the first Asian country to recognize same-sex marriage. So Taiwan's political system, opposite to what's happening in the PRC, is one factor in it being more attractive. So particularly for China watchers, earlier it made sense to go to Taiwan to study and to travel as compared to China with its closed system, its difficult rules and navigating bureaucracy. Here's another point. Consider right now Taiwan's success with COVID-19. A lot of people were talking about why the World Health Organization wasn't recognizing the amazing work that Taiwan has done in containing the pandemic. This is the strength of Taiwan's soft power. The final factor that I'm going to get into is the Taiwanese economy. And I'm going to get to that with Deep's second question, which was, what was Taiwan's success story for extensive economic growth and how do they plan to pull? Again, going back in history, from 1950 to 1965, U.S. aid accounted for roughly 6.5% of Taiwan's GDP. And the stimulus worked. The funds sparked Taiwan's economy and it resulted in self-sustainable and rapid economic growth. So from the early 1960s onwards, Taiwan began a model of export-oriented growth based on industrial production. So Taiwan's initial industrialization was spurred by the growth of textile factories and companies that produce light manufacturing, like small appliances, footwear, athletic equipment, and so on. Companies then slowly moved to manufacturing semiconductors and electronic equipment, including radios, television sets, computers. And then Taiwan became a part of a group called the Four Asian Tigers, you know, Singapore, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. The rapid industrialization of these nations pushed their economic growth near 8%, which was an extraordinarily high mark. In Taiwan's case, this was called the Taiwanese miracle. So in the 1980s, Taiwan moved to capital-intensive and knowledge-based industries. So they had a high rate of savings, rising labor productivity, privatization, astute government planning, considerable foreign investment. And all of this pushed Taiwan's rapid economic expansion. The 1997 and 2008 financial crises did affect the economy, but not very much. The current state of the Taiwanese economy is also pretty encouraging. The service sector of Taiwan is now its most dynamic and its fastest growing. It accounts for about 2/3 of Taiwan's GDP or gross domestic product. I'm sure you all know a lot of Taiwanese brands without knowing that they're actually Taiwanese. Acer, Asus, Foxconn, HTC, MediaTek, bicycle brands like Giant and Merida, Asia Cement, Trend Micro, Cathay Pacific. I can go on, but these are all brands that are made in Taiwan. Of course, things aren't perfect. Over the last 2 to 3 decades, Taiwan has relied on exporting intermediate goods to China, where it would then become final goods, and then those would be exported elsewhere. And even now, China remains the largest export destination for Taiwan. Taiwan is dependent on exporting to China for its growth. How it deals with something, how it's planning on dealing with this in the future is something that I'll get to in a minute when I answer the third question. So Deep's third question is, what is Tsai Ing-wen's policies? Now, this is a really broad question. Tsai Ing-wen is the president of Taiwan. She's part of the Democratic People's Party. And there are a lot of policies that are carried out. I think I'm going to talk about two major ones. The first is on the foreign policy stage. So the most important policy you should know about is Taiwan's new southbound policy. A lot of politicians within Taiwan are worried about over-reliance on mainland China. As I'd said before, Taiwanese companies operating in China account for at least 10% of the country's total exports, according to a study by Citibank. It also says that Taiwanese technology companies alone employ about 10 million people in China. So in 2016, Tsai Ing-wen launched this policy called the New Southbound Policy. And the aim was to diversify trade partners. So what this policy did was it identified 18 countries in the region, ranging from Pakistan in Taiwan's west to New Zealand in Taiwan's southeast. So under the policy, Taiwanese tech companies favor relocating to countries like Vietnam, Malaysia, and Thailand. Manufacturers go to lower wage countries like Bangladesh. And so the aim is to just diversify all of their partners. And the policy's effects are becoming clearer. Over the last decade, 40% of Taiwan's total trade volume has relied on China. Officials now say that figure is about 38%, and the government wants it to go lower. Tourism, for example, is up 56%, according to the Taiwan Asia Exchange Forum, with 50,000 Asians coming to study in Taiwan last year. Of course, this doesn't include the COVID-19 statistics. Now, when it comes to Tsai Ing-wen's policies, I think we also need to talk about what happens within Taiwanese politics, which is extremely fascinating once you start reading about it. So the main dividing factor in Taiwan's politics is relations with China, obviously. So at one end of the spectrum, you have people who want Taiwanese independence. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have people who want to unify with China. So the Kuomintang, the party that I'd mentioned at the beginning, is still an important political party in China, but they're seen rather as pro-unification. Whereas the Democratic People's Party, which is currently in power, of which Tsai Ing-wen is a part of, is seen as pro-status quo. So what this means is that the DPP, or the Democratic People's Party, is not pro-independence, but pro-status quo. So in 1999, the DPP passed a resolution where they acknowledged the Republic of China as Taiwan's official name and governing system. But what they do is, instead of seeking formal independence, they say that Taiwan has always been independent because they've been the Republic of China. This is interesting because of a series of moves by the Trump administration to increase ties with Taiwan. The most recent one is just this week. The Trump administration removed decades-old restrictions on interactions with Taiwanese officials just days before President-elect Joe Biden takes office. Now, predicting the future is not my forte because I am not a fortune teller, but I definitely think this is something that we should watch out for. India's own ties with Taiwan are definitely increasing, particularly with Taiwan's new southbound policies. So on another note, a lot of netizens from Thailand, Taiwan, and Hong Kong have a loose coalition against China called the Milk Tea Alliance. And it seems natural that India, with its love for chai, should join them. That's on a lighter note, folks. Chai should be for guiding hearts, not for guiding foreign policy. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this week's Q&A segment of States of Anarchy. Thank you again, Deep, for your really amazing questions. I'm attaching links about Taiwan in the episode description, so do go check those out. If you have follow-up questions about Taiwan or China or anything else in global affairs and foreign policy, then just email me at ivmstatesofanarchy@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram at statesofanarchy or on Twitter at humsneeh. If you want to show us some love, send this episode to someone who you think may enjoy it. You can also leave us a rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can listen to States of Anarchy not only on the IVM podcast app and website, but also on Spotify, iTunes, Gaana, Google Podcasts, or whatever you're using right now. We'll be back next week.